Yo, it's popping, it's popular. I just sat with Ennis. The interview was outstanding. It was amazing, man. Great conversation, a lot of insight. Two intellectual minds. It's beautiful. I really appreciate it. I'm grateful. Much gratitude.
What's going on, everyone? Welcome to this episode of I'm Made for More podcast. It's your host, Ennis, here, and I'm really excited because today we have a very special guest on the show. It's the one and only Anthony Ward Jr. Now, I don't expect you to know who Anthony is because he typically goes by his stage name, Papier. Papier is a multi-platinum music producer, recording artist, and entrepreneur who's signed to Sony Music Publishing, which, by the way, is the largest music publishing company in the world and the same publishing company Beyonce, Kanye West, and Ed Sheeran are signed to. In this interview, Papier shares his journey from growing up in poverty and being homeless at one point to producing number one Billboard hits for Chris Brown, T-Pain, Tory Lanez, and more. We also discuss the importance of mastery, networking, as well as why most people don't succeed. Now, before we get into the show, I want to take a quick second to thank you for your continued support. If you enjoy this episode, please rate the show on Apple Podcasts or just hit that follow button on Spotify. It's super quick and easy on your end and really helps us out on our end. Now, without further ado, enjoy the show. Welcome, welcome, welcome. I'm excited because today we have a very special guest. He's a multi-platinum record producer, music producer, artist, songwriter. He does it all. He's probably produced your favorite song. He's worked with artists like Chris Brown, T-Pain, Tory Lanez, and the list goes on and on. It's the one and only Papier. Brother, thank you for making the time today.
It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. It's an honor.
Absolutely. Honor's mine, bro. All right. So usually I start off by asking all my guests one question, the same question, but we'll get to it a little later. I think first, I'd like to know, you know, what's it like being Papier? You know, your career is blowing up. What's a typical day look like for you right now?
My days are pretty simple for the most part. First thing I try to do is I try to wake up, pray, try to thank God for the day, forgive me of my sins, and just ask for guidance and direction, really, and just protection. You know, I think, you know, when you're moving fast in a direction, whether it be success, progression, you know, it's always good to have that humility to know that, you know, this doesn't just come from your well-being or whatever mastery you have, but there's someone there that's doing it. For me, it's God, it's Jesus. So I just try to just thank him for the blessings of the day and just, you know, just to stay continually blessed. More progression. So it just starts with prayer. And then from there, I'm off to the works. You know, I'm working, I'm emailing on different calls. You know, I'm currently signed to Sony ATV. Sony Music, they changed it to Sony Music Publishing. It's the biggest publishing company in the world. So, you know, they always keep me busy with different projects on the producer and writing side. And I'm also a recording artist. So I'm always writing new music, not only for other artists, but for myself as well. And I just got into trading. I'm also an investor as well. I got into crypto last year. I bought a few Bitcoins at 19,000 and went up to 64,000. And then now it's went down, then it's climbing back up. So
is that like 50K right now, 45? Yeah, something like that.
Yep. So I think that, you know, I have investments in that. I have investments in different index funds. And I'm currently learning how to trade right now. So it just goes just around checking my investments, trading, and just, you know, just doing different music-related tasks. And also, in terms of business, I've been working with different tech companies on just new technology that I feel like will innovate the music industry. Just being that creative consultant to kind of give these ideas, but also to facilitate it to other artists. So got my hands full and a little bit of everything, you know?
Yeah, you're doing everything. And it's important to always practice gratitude. It's always important to want more, but practicing gratitude is super important. It's a little bit easier when you're, how many floors off the ground you're at right now?
We're on the 50th floor, man.
Let's see it. Let's see it. Ooh, wee, that Miami.
In the 50th floor, Miami time, man.
That's awesome, man. Congrats on all your success. I know, you know, reading into your story hasn't been easy. It's been a long journey, and I can't wait to get into that. So you talked about a lot. So I'm guessing you're an early bird now. You get up pretty early.
I'm a big early bird. For me, I just feel like you can utilize more of the day if you wake up earlier.
Especially what time you get up?
I try to get up around 7, between 7, no later than 9:30. If I get up at 10, I feel like a waste, you know? yep. But I usually try to, you know, by 7:30, 8, I'm definitely out rolling easily without no question.
Yeah. All right, so let's get into the question that I typically like to ask all my guests, which is, if you could teach everyone in the world, right, one topic or concept relating to either life or business, what concept would it be?
Man, that's... And it's related to life or business?
Right.
Can it be two different things? Because I think those are two different paradigms.
Whatever you want, bro.
I think in life, I would teach people to just be... to love God. Because I feel like if you love God, then your principle and your moral standard is at a certain level. I think in business, I would just teach people to create money-making skills, right? So I think what got me to my level is that, and I'm very early in my career, but I feel like what got me to my level is that I understood the concept of mastery, you know, from an early age. So I understood that if I master one craft, now I can be paid a certain amount because of the time and the mastery that I put in. Like right now, my refrigerator is like messed up, but I have to call a specialist that specializes in this particular issue with my refrigerator. And whatever he chooses to charge me, I have to do that because he specialized in this craft. You know what I'm saying? So I would teach people to become a master at one thing, specialize in one thing. And what I've learned is that the world will always reward you handsomely when you specialize or master one thing. You know, I mean, it could be something crazy that you can master, but there's something about an obsession that we have of people who just master something at a level that's above average. You know, I mean, look at the Guinness World Record book, you know. That company wouldn't be in existence if there was no such thing as people who are masters. Those are people who, in essence, they've mastered a particular thing, right? So I would teach people, yo, love God and master craft.
Yeah, I already knew this was going to be a TED Talk. All right. So no, I totally agree, man. It's all about getting really good at one thing, because that's how you can, you know, specialize and start charging, right? Start making money. If for my listeners who are listening, who understand that they need to specialize in something or master one thing, but are unsure of what it is that they should master, what their passions are in life, what is your advice on how they can go about finding that?
I mean, for me, it was very natural. I mean, I'm a very organic person. Like, I believe that whatever you master should be something that you love. I think it's very difficult to master something that you're not passionate about. For me, I had multiple jobs in life. I was a door-to-door salesman. I worked in hotels. I worked in retail. I did the most monotonous jobs. And I don't really see myself mastering door-to-door sales or retail or anything of that nature or anything I did in the hospitality industry, just simply because I didn't love it. But music for me, you know, I've been doing music my whole life. I learned about music before I learned how to read and write, literally.
That's crazy, yeah.
And, you know, for me, those 15 years that I put into music didn't feel like 15 years. It just felt like I was doing something I loved. And, you know, towards the end of those years, I started to get paid and rewarded for it. But for me, it was always just about just doing what I love to do, you know? So for anyone that doesn't know their passion, just simple, whatever you love to do, just do it repeatedly. And I feel like when you love something, you're going to become obsessive about it. And I feel like that obsessive learning is what takes you to that different paradigm of creation. You know, right. When you reach that level, Robert Greene refers to it as tacit knowledge, which is knowledge that you learn that can't be explained. You just be learned and acquired through experience.
Yeah. It's all about committing. I think people, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, but I think people, you know, want success overnight. I mean, your journey is a perfect example. It's been a 15-year overnight success, right? I mean, people are just not patient enough. They're not committed enough and to their goals. And I think it reminds me of something. I recently had a Zipweb CEO. He's a messaging software, the founder and CEO, John Lauer. And he just sold his company for, what is it, $850 million just a few months ago. Crazy. And I'll never forget what he said. He said, and I hope I'm not butchering this, but he said, commitment is a decision, right? And the Latin root of the word decision is scission, which means to cut. So you're not actually choosing one option over the other. You're actually cutting off all other options. And it kind of reminds me of that Think and Grow Rich. I'm not sure if you read that book by Napoleon Hill. Yeah. When they burn all the ships and they, you know, take over the other, I can't even remember the story, but they're taking over an island. He comes in with two ships. They're up against, like, I don't know, 50 ships or whatever. They burn all their ships. It's just like a metaphor for, you know, go all in. You know what I mean? You got to be fully committed to your ideas. So I totally agree with that. Let's talk about your childhood, right? I know you were born in Boston, but grew up in a small town near West Virginia called Bluefield, right? Yes. What was it like growing up there, and what did you see for yourself?
I mean, growing up in West Virginia was very difficult, because I think that was the first time I really realized that my parents didn't have money. I remember my first Christmas, you know, my parents took me to the store and was like, pick one toy. And I'll never forget, I bought this spaceship. And I'll never forget that spaceship. And I remember we only had one channel because we couldn't afford cable. And, you know, when we were in Boston, you know, we kind of had so much family and just relatives and friends that I never realized we didn't have much. But when we came to West Virginia, it was kind of like it was a wake-up call. And, you know, West Virginia, we were living in a town of 10,000 people. So that small town, the big city to the small town environment was a huge culture shock for me. And it caused me to be very closed off, you know, because throughout the time of me living there, I traveled a lot to Atlanta, Boston. My older brother is from New York. Spent a lot of time in just different cities. And I think when you're in a small town, you kind of have a small town mentality. It's kind of like the shark can only be as big as its tank. And I felt like I was a big shark in a small tank. And it was frustrating. And it just drove me to, it drove me to master my craft, which was music. Mm-hmm. You know, because it was a small town, there wasn't much to do. And it was like a blessing in disguise that I wasn't aware of. Because, you know, as my other family was getting in trouble and just gangs, drugs, just influence, my other family, you know, my cousins and stuff that were in the inner city, for me, I didn't really have a lot of that. I wasn't exposed to a lot of that. And it just allowed me to just focus on my music. So just being in a small town, obviously, in a small town, you're going to have the gangs, the violence, the drugs and stuff, but I think the influence of that isn't nearly as large as, you know, you're in a city like Boston or New York or Atlanta. So for me, it was just like, I was able to focus. My first hint at entrepreneurship was DJing. I was a DJ. About 14, 15, I started DJing. Started DJing school dances. And then I started actually throwing my own parties and collecting all the profit. And then I started creating partnerships with different sound rental companies. So instead of like having to buy all the sound equipment and house it, I would just have the sound rental company. I'd rent the sound from them. They deliver it to the parties, pay them like $70 or whatever. Then I'd have like like my little brother or sister working like the food, like they'll sell candy and soda and stuff at the parties. Then I would DJ, then I have my cousin be the security. I was like at 15, I had like this mini operation. And because of that, I never had to get a job.
Where did that hustle mindset come from, do you think?
I mean, it definitely came from my parents. You know, both of my parents came to the United States as, they came as immigrants from, my mother's from Haiti. And my father's from Liberia. So they always instilled that hustle mentality. You know, they're very brilliant people, but they work really hard. And my mom is a super hustler. I remember, you know, on the weekends, she'd be at the flea market selling. And then I remember she did Avon in the 90s. You know, that was like the door-to-door makeup. That was when the makeup industry was just like, first had its first boom. But we were going door-to-door selling Avon. And I'm with her, you know what I'm saying? And she just was just a hustler. She was selling perfumes. She was selling the oils. I mean, she just, anything she could find and sell and flip, she would do it. So inadvertently, it just kind of just rubbed off on me. So I just took that same hustling mentality and just ran it up.
Yeah, and I was reading that your mom was a big inspiration for why you got into music. Is that right?
Definitely, definitely. I mean, my mom was the one that just instilled it into me that it was possible. And she got me into a lot of different music lessons. And she just always raised my belief and my faith and my confidence and just being able to have confidence in myself, confidence in God, confidence that whatever I want to do, I could achieve it. And, you know, she was a big supporter. You know, I moved to Miami by myself when I was 17. So, you know, I got her blessings to do that. I didn't really have much, but I just promised her that I was going to make it work. And I stood on that promise.
Yeah. By the way, how do you have the courage at 17 years old? I mean, you're just barely out of high school at the time, right? To just move out of a small little bubble in whatever city in West Virginia to just go to a big city, I guess, like Miami. Like, how do you have the courage to go all alone with not much in your pocket, like you said?
I mean, the way I looked at it was like this. It's like, what do I have to lose? You know, I'm already in a small town. I'm already at the bottom at that current point. Like, what would I have to lose? You know, it's like, do I stay here in Bluefield or do I go to where my talents could be seen and heard? Because I understood the importance of networking and the importance of visibility, being seen, being in the right place, being in the right moments, making the right connections. So I understood that concept very well at a young age. So I knew that I had the talent. I just needed to be seen. You know what I'm saying? It's just like having a product that's not on the stores. That's not on the shelves. We have the best product in the world, but if no one could see it, you know, how can it be sold? So I just felt like I was the product. I just needed to be seen. And, you know, within the first couple of weeks, I was definitely doing everything I could to be seen.
Totally. I mean, it's just like, I love this example, but it's like McDonald's, right? They don't got the best burgers, but they can sell them the best.
Yep.
Exactly. Yeah.
And
all right. So,
the greatest thing about McDonald's is that their system. I don't think people give enough credit to McDonald's system. McDonald's has a system that's so easy that even a 16-year-old can enter that system. A multi-billion-dollar system. Think about it. I think McDonald's hires at 16. Yeah. They structured it so easy that you don't even have to be legal to you know, make them money. It's a simple system. And what did everybody else follow suit, you know?
Yep. It's all about processes. I think once you get them down, I don't know if you've watched the movie The Founder. Have you watched that?
The Founder?
Yeah.
No,
I
gotta watch it.
Bro, you're missing half your life, my guy. It's the whole story of McDonald's and how this Ray Kroc. He was a door-to-door salesman, so I'm sure you'd love it. And bro, I don't want to give up too much, but I'd highly recommend it. It's called The Founder. It's the whole story of McDonald's and Ray Kroc and how he turned that company into the multi-billion empire it is today. All right, so fast forward to college. So you're in Miami. You went to Miami International University, Arts and Design, and got a degree in audio production. Right.
Yep.
Now, like you mentioned earlier, you're big into network, and I think you played college the right way and that you focused on building meaningful relationships. How has building powerful network and meaningful relationships impacted your career so far?
I feel like it impacted my career in the sense that I feel like every power move I made came from a network or a person that helped connect that dot. So in the music industry, it's all about who you know and what you've done. You get what I'm saying? No one comes from the bottom and just, you know what I'm saying? Someone has to put you on, whether a label signs you, someone invests in you, someone introduced you to this person. It's just the ranking of it. It's just set up as a big network. And the farther you go up in the network, the more potential you have to make more earnings and more capital. So for me, I realized, like I said, from early that networking is super important.
Yeah, and you met Ronnie J there too, right? In college, or was it after college, or
when did you meet? It was in college.
It was in college. All right. And at what point did you meet Tory Lanez? Was that also in college?
Yeah, I met him in college as well.
What's the story on how you met Tory?
Well, I met Tory through a mutual friend of ours named Uno.
Mm.
And Uno was really good friends with Tory at the time. And he just played Tory my music. And I think the first initial times, I think Tory struck it off, but I started to get better. And then it was just like, yo, like, I was at work one day and he just called my phone and was like, yo, bro, I'm on tour. When I come back, let's work. And he stuck to his word and we started working. But, you know, the interesting thing about that is that, you know, with Tory, it was really a test of faith and patience, because when I met him in 2017, nothing really came out until like the end of 2019. So that's 3 years of just consistent, just building relationship, coming to the studio. Like, you know, it's a very, like, psychologically difficult to do something continuously and not see much result from it or capital. And for me, I'm coming to the studio for 3 years almost, and, like, you know, no music is being released. And then the first song we released shoots to number one on Apple Music, album goes number one, platinum, the whole nine, you know? So I feel like that's just a testament of patience, my faith in God, and just networking and just not folding. I think most people fold on their dreams.
How so?
I just think that, I mean, if most people didn't fail and fold on their dreams, then everybody would be successful. Everybody has a dream. Everybody has an admiration. Everybody has an ambition. Everyone wakes up and see something that they think that they could become, or they believe that they can become. But not everybody stays the course. And that's what I mean by folding.
Was there ever a point when, during your journey, right, before the hit records, when you had maybe like family members or friends tell you like, hey, bro, you know, you gave it your all. You've been doing this for X amount of years. It's not popping off. You know, maybe you should try something else. Has that ever happened? And did you ever think about throwing in the towel? And what kept you motivated?
I never thought about throwing in the towel, but there's definitely been tough times, you know, with my mom, my father, my family, brothers, cousins, you know, everybody kind of just looking like when are you going to make it? And I think, you know, from their perspective, it was kind of easy to say that. But, you know, the music industry is like one of the most complex, ambitious. You know, it's not only complex, but it's also vicious. You know, it's one of the most complex and vicious industries in the world. And there's no linear path to success. Like, if you decide you want to become a producer, a writer, a rapper, or artist, I wouldn't even have the blueprint to give you. Because there's no blueprint that you could give one person. Everybody's story is different. Everybody's story is unique. You know, it's not like becoming a lawyer, you know, where you have this linear path, go to school, study, do your board, start a practice, work under someone. You know, there's so many different, you know, linear paths. But with music, there's no linear path. So I think that when I was struggling, it was easy for everybody to say, just give up, or I don't know what's going on or whatever. But for me, I always knew. I always had my faith in God. I always had everything instilled in me that I was going to be who I was going to be, regardless of how long it took. you know, and I still feel that way currently. You know, I feel like I'm just scratching the surface. You know, I've only been really in the industry for like maybe 2 years, 3 years, really, you know. So, I mean, what kept me is just my faith in God, and just I know how hard I work, and I know that, you know, what's down got to come up,
you know. Totally. Yep. And I totally agree, you know. Exactly. Yeah, totally. Success is, you know, never linear. But I do believe that success leaves clues, right? What advice would you give, you know, an aspiring music producer, artist? What's one piece of advice you'd give them?
Be as unique as possible. Be unique. Be distinctive. You know, if you look at everybody who's left an impact, or everybody who's hot, or anybody that's worthy of speaking about, they have their own unique sound. They have their own unique look. They have their own unique voice. You know, I feel like we're kind of in a place where everybody just wants to be a copycat. Like, I just want to copy this person's look. I want to copy this person's sound. But that's not what got them to that level. They might have been inspired, but they took that inspiration and then created their own unique thing, their own unique brand, their own unique identity. And that's my advice. Be unique. Be unique and work as hard as you can. Work hard. Work smart. Put yourself in the right position.
Yeah. What was the process for you on how you found your voice?
To be honest, I never really wanted to become a recording artist. I was in a relationship and I got heartbroken. So I started taking beats I would produce and I started just singing on them. And then from then I learned songwriting, and then I'd play it for huge artists like Tory, and they'd just be mind blown a little bit. Like, whoa, this, what you have is hot. Like, this is good. And I'm just like, really? Like, I'm just venting about this girl that broke my heart. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't think I was doing that crazy. You know, and I play for different people and people that I respected. And, you know, once I got that response, you know, not just from your friends, but like people I really, truly respected musically. And I think that was enough for me to just say, all right, cool. I think I got something. Let me just keep going and give it a shot.
Yeah, no, I love it, man. Okay, so let's get back to your story. So you graduate college and then you went on to work for a sales and marketing agency. And then I don't know if my research serves me correctly, but you were acting at one point and was on the show Ballers with Dwayne Johnson. Is that right?
Yeah, man, you went far back, bro. Yeah, bro, I was doing a little acting in college. I was on Ballers. I was on like the season finale, I think of the first season. Cameo, like the Rock walks in, like he walks in, like what happens, and he just looks at me, and then I got a few little seconds on the camera. I was doing extra work, man. For me, it was just like, bro, I was literally doing whatever to get the bills paid, bro. And acting was easy. Just show up on set, and eat good food, network, get a little check. All right, cool.
That's funny. How much do you make off that little snippet? Can you like say it or not?
I didn't think $9. It was nothing.
That's funny. Well, you know,
when you're a struggling college student, bro, you'll take anything, dog.
Oh, my God, bro. Don't even remind me. When I was in college, dog, this is what I would do. I would literally download the whole calendar of like all the events going on at all the school, right? The whole school at the university. I'd download it literally every day. I'd have my lunch and dinner figured out. You know what I mean? Cause I would just crash these events for free food, and it was a bunch of networking. You know what I mean?
Bro, why didn't I do that?
Seriously, bro. I was
Velveeta. I lived out Velveeta and Papa John's.
That's funny. No, bro. There was a bunch of pizza.
Velveeta with no sauce, just mac and cheese, dog.
That's a little funny, bro. I know it was Pagliacci pizza first.
Velveeta, bro.
Yeah, they had Jimmy John's one day. They had pasta from Boca de Pepo. I was living like a king, bro, as a college student, all for free. Bunch of catered food. All right. So tell me, so you're taking on different roles, right? Just trying to get by. You were kind of, I wouldn't say homeless, but you were work you were living with like a bunch of roommates, is that right? In like a little apartment at the time?
I was homeless at one point. I was living with a bunch of people and I was homeless at one point.
For real? Okay, tell me about that. What was that experience like?
Well, at one point I had about like four roommates in a one bedroom. Everybody was just struggling. But like, this was my cousin, my boy, just good friends. And I was just, you know, just like, bro, you could crash out at my crib. I don't really have much, but you know. And then everybody would kind of just chip in, you know, we just would make it work. And then, you know, just by having so many people in a one bedroom apartment, it just, I guess like the leasing office just, they just didn't like that. So I went, right. I went to Atlanta to spend Christmas with my family and my mom and my cousins and uncle. And I came back and one of my roommates was just left a note. They left a letter. It was like, yeah, you got a letter. The letter was like, bro, you got like 60 days to leave. We're not evicting you, but you can't stay here.
Damn.
And so after that time, I was just homeless for about 6 months. In those 6 months, bro, like I just had my music equipment in my car. Sometime I would record in my car and I would just from couch to couch, bro. I had one of my boys that was living with me, he ended up getting a crib. Then I had my cousin that was living with me got a crib. So the people I helped out ended up helping me out. And then 6 months later, I ended up just getting an apartment. So.
Yeah. So tell me about your first break, you know, your first big break after, you know, you're just scraping by. How were you able to afford that apartment? Was that like just through a 9-to-5 or was that when you're.
But I was just doing, you know, at that time I was working that whole time. I was working as an audiovisual technician.
Okay.
I was working as an audio visual technician in like downtown Miami, Brickell. And bro, I just worked crazy hours. And then like one day I was like, yo, I'm done. And I quit. And then shout out David Velez. He did something real cool for me. He was my director. He was like the boss. He was like, look, man, I know you need money. You know, I don't think it's smart for you to quit. I'll just make you a part-time employee. Meaning you could just come work whenever you want. So I would literally, he would tell me what days I could work and I would say yes or no. And I just kind of built my schedule around that. And I just came there when I needed to make some money.
Damn. Okay. So what year was this?
2017.
Was that the same year that you had, wasn't Jerry Sprunger, right? Am I messing that up?
Jerry Sprunger came out at the end of 2019.
So you're sending
the first year that I just worked, went a full year without a job.
Got it. So at what point did that first song just skyrocket and you make your first big check? Like when was that?
Jerry Sprunger, 2019.
Jerry Sprunger. Okay. So 2019. What did you splurge on when you first got that check? Was there something that you like dreamt of buying?
Rent, bro. I was behind like 2 months on rent. 2 months on rent, 2 months on my car note, 2 months on insurance, 2 months on everything I was behind.
That's funny.
I texted my landlord and I was like, bro, look, I'm going to pay back on this date. I know I'm late, but I'm going to pay everything, bro. Just give me this amount. And I got my first check.
So I know we're a little bit short on time here, but I want to ask you this last question. Where did the inspiration for the beat, I Ain't Been Broke in a Minute, you know, come from? And how long did it take you to produce that beat?
I love that beat, man. One of my favorite beats because it's like, there's just something special about that beat and the way it comes on in the club and no matter, and just the energy and just like, it's just like a feel-good song. Like, yep. who wants to say I Ain't Been Broke in a Minute? It's just like, it just makes you get money and it just makes you just feel good, bro. It's just an uplifting song, you know? It's like a triumphant and hear the horns in the back, it's just triumphant. But bro, that beat probably took me less than 20, 30 minutes to make. And that beat, I don't know, bro. I just make a bunch of beats throughout the day and I was just one beat that I made and I sat on. I thought it was a cool beat. Didn't think much of it. One day I was at Tori's crib. I put a bunch of beats, like 30, 40 beats on his laptop, on the desktop, and I put it in all caps with my name so you can see it. One day, he's just at the crib. He's doing a little get-together. There's a couple girls, a couple of homies. And he just leaves, and he goes in his studio room, And I hear my tag come on, that Poppy Your tag, right before the beat comes on, and I'm just like, okay. And he did a recording to it, and then by the end of the night, he deleted it. He deleted, he's like, nah, I don't like this. And then I just left. He was like, I'm gonna do it again. And I was like, all right, man. And then I go on Instagram, and I just see my Instagram, and I just gained like 4,000 followers. I'm like, yo, what just happened? And then like, he tagged me in a video. He went and shot the video in LA, no one even knew. And he put a post on the gram, and like, it just got like, I think he got like a million views on the gram. And then we dropped the video, got like a million views in that same day. And it just went crazy. And then, you know, Diddy had said it was his favorite song. My favorite producer, Swiss Beatz, reached out to me. He said he plays it all the time in his house, and his son is a fan of mine. And shout out Yaya, Swizzy's son. That's the little homie. And you know, so many people just reached out. French Montana. You know, it was a great time. You know, it's crazy is that that record went platinum in the middle, dropped right before the pandemic. So it dropped like February. So,
and that's wild.
Numbers still did hundreds of millions of streams, millions of views on YouTube. And it's just a blessing, bro. Like, it just everything happened in God's timing, man.
Yeah, what's written for you is for you, bro. He won't pass you, right?
100%.
Yeah, absolutely. So I want to switch gears just a little bit. We have a Made for More mindset segment. It's a segment where we get insight into the mindset and successful habits that Papier does to make what Papier is, right? So there's five questions. So the first one is, what book had the biggest impact on your career and why?
For me, I would say the Bible, bro, because it's faith. I mean, before I had any success, I had to have faith. And that taught me faith. It taught me the importance of faith, prayer, just dedication, discipline. I mean, there's so many examples I go on for days. I'll say the Bible.
Second one is, how often do you journal and set goals for yourself? And what does that process look like?
As far as journaling, I'm not too big on journaling, but I'm big on setting goals and organizing my thoughts. I don't know if you would call that a journal. I don't know what you would call a journal, but I organize thoughts and goals and things I want to do daily. You know, whether it be like someone I have to call or different concepts, or just different amounts of money that I want to hit for the day or the week or the month or the year. You know, I'm just constantly writing down concepts. Maybe that would be considered journaling. I don't know. Some people consider journaling more their personal ideas and thoughts.
Mm-hmm. Well, how do you organize them? Is it just on the Notes app or what?
Yeah, I go to the Notes because I think the Notes is cool because you can set up, it shows you the date, the time. Like, there was one note I wrote down from when I had like negative $26 in my account after I graduated. And I just went to a job interview and I didn't get the job. And it was one of the lowest points I've ever been in. And one of the lowest financial point I've ever been in. I've never been in a negative. You know, and at that point, I wrote that number down because I told myself I'll never be at this point again. And I never was. And I went back and I looked at that note probably a few weeks ago, probably like a month or two ago.
Damn, that's crazy. What did you have written? I'll never be in this position again?
I just wrote down that I had things like negative $27, and I just wrote down that I didn't get the job. And that was just powerful to me because I knew like at that moment, a shift occurred in my life, like mentally, spiritually, physically, like, I knew that at that moment I reached the bottom, but I knew that bottom is what it took for me to get to move forward. It's like in stocks, like, you know, I trade daily, and it's like any stock that hits the bottom never stays there. Or I trade indexes, you know, any index or cryptocurrency, whatever. It'll go to the bottom for a little bit, but it always shoots back up. Always. It just takes time, bro.
Totally. Especially if you hit it. And if you hit it at the right time, it's all about timing.
Yeah, it's just about timing. When you hit that bottom, I look at it as like it's a blessing. Because all I could do is go up from it.
Buy the dip.
Yeah, buy the dip. You got to buy it. People are scared of the dip. But the dip is where millionaires are waiting. Billionaires.
It's true. It's true.
Nobody wants to go in when it's at the bottom. Everybody wants to buy at the top, which doesn't make sense. Literally.
Yep, it's a you got to have the cojones is what they call it, bro. Huh? So I say you got to have the cojones is what they call it.
He has the cojones, man.
All right, so the third one is, what has been the worst piece of advice you've ever received?
Bro, I just feel like this is a lot of advice that this worldly wisdom of like I don't know, bro. I just feel like a lot of things that people say that don't really make sense when you really think about it. Like, never give up. Bro, I wanted to play basketball, bro. I wanted to be in the NBA. But I gave up on that dream because I knew I didn't have what it took to be at that level in that particular thing. Do you get what I'm saying? Like, yeah. I think it's a myth to really think that everything is supposed to work for you at a certain level. Right? I mean, now let me not say it's a myth, but let me just rephrase and say that you have to know what you're built for. Like, McDonald's is not built for extravagant food. McDonald's is not Philippe Chow. And Philippe Chow is not McDonald's. But they're both two successful companies in their own right. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, I don't think I was built to be a basketball player, but I am exceptional at basketball. But I don't think I was built for the NBA. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So if someone would have told me never give up on playing basketball, who knows where I would have been? And maybe I would have not got to the blessings that where I was supposed to be, which is in music, entrepreneurship, creativity. You know, so I think that the never give up narrative is kind of like, these should just be rephrased on more so just in a different way. It needs to just be put in a way to where it's just like more realistic. You know, I think it's just, you need to know when it's time to reshift your energy to what's more favorable for you. You know, sometimes we're running an uphill where we could just be going faster if we're going the other way down it.
Totally. Self-awareness is key, man. All right. This leads perfectly into my next question, which is, why do you think most people don't succeed?
I think most people don't succeed simply because lack of knowledge, lack of education, knowledge, daily habits, mindset. You know, I started trading 2 weeks ago. Now I'm averaging between 500 to 1,000 a day. I told everybody I know that I really, you know, care about, like, bro, this isn't super hard. I have the trade signals. All you got to do is this, this, and this. This is the profit I made. You know, I'm not a trader. I'm a musician. And I'm taking significant profit within the first couple of weeks. You should join. And they're like, oh, I got to research it. Oh, I got to do this. And it's just like, okay, I see why you're in this position in life.
Mm-hmm.
You can take advantage of the opportunities. What else is there to research? I'm showing you my results. It's like, it's not even like I'm doing something special. I'm literally following a trade signal. You just have to follow the signal.
It's all overthinking. It's all in your head.
That's just a small example. But I feel like most people don't get to where they want to be because of daily habits and the mindset. Some people don't believe it's possible to make seven figures or eight figures, so they never get there. Some people just don't have the self-discipline. You know, some people don't have the ability, like that 3 years I spent of doing the same thing, getting to the studio, making music, nothing coming out. Maybe they wouldn't have gotten to that third year of the hit record or whatever, you know what I'm saying? Because they may have given up.
Yeah.
And I know that kind of contradicts what I said before about not giving up, but I think that
self-awareness. It's knowing.
Being aware and knowing that if you have the ability, right? Now, if I was in the NBA or the G League, I wouldn't give up.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So in my position, I was already working with different artists of a high stature in the industry. So it didn't make sense for me to give up.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But yeah, I think it just comes from self-discipline and mindset, bro, to be honest. And I really
I mean, like, I
you can't really do anything that you just discipline yourself on, you know, yep. like you were saying, decision. We decide to yep. cut everything off and just focus on this. You can get to where you want to be. It's just that totally. it's not extravagant. It's not beautiful. It's not sexy.
Exactly. 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 And I like to say, I mean, you don't determine your future, your habits do, right? It's all about, like you just said, habits, mindset, and just being disciplined. I mean, you lose motivation, but as long as, you know, you get up when you don't want to get up and put in the reps in, you're going to see some progress, whether you like it or not, you know?
Yeah, that's what it comes down to, man. I just feel like people are not willing to do the dirty work and just the discipline. And, you know, I think like I said before, I think we're in this microwave society, you know, everything is microwave. You want to lose fat, go get a BBL. You want muscles, take a pill, get steroids. You want 1 million followers, go buy them.
Man.
You know, we're just in a society to where technology and resources has allowed us to expedite things that shouldn't really be expedited, you know. I don't know if they had BBLs 1,000 years ago or 200 years ago. Or even 50 years ago, you know what I'm saying? I don't know if steroids were available 50 years ago, but we have it now. And because we have these things that expedite results, people kind of feel like things could be expedited, you know? But if you look at the people who are truly at the top, it wasn't expedited.
Fifth and final one is, how do you define success at 28?
Freedom. Just being able to have the freedom, the liberty to do what I want. You know, I think for me, I don't put success at a number because I feel like there's different types of wealth, right? You could be a doctor right now, right? And let's say you make $300,000 a year. What are doctors making? Starting off about $200,000 to $400,000?
Something like that. Yeah.
But you're on call every single day, depending on what kind of doctor you are. You only have a certain amount of days off, right?
Yep.
You're making a lot of money, but you don't have time wealth. You have financial wealth and time wealth. So you're not totally free. You don't have the freedom or the liberty to do the things that you want to do every day.
Yep.
Do you get what I'm saying? At 28 years old, I feel like success to me is just being able to have the freedom. Having not only the financial wealth, but the time wealth, you know, having the peace, the liberty to do what I want. You know what I'm saying? So for me, I would always choose, even if it may mean making less money, but if I'm able to do the things that I want when I want to do it and having that time wealth, that's success to me. And that's what I didn't have before.
Yeah. Has that ever changed? Has your definition of
I had the time, but I didn't have the finances. You know what I'm saying? And I feel like when you the wealth of time and the wealth of the capital of the revenue, when you put it together, that's success to me.
Yeah. Has your definition of success ever changed or evolved, or has it always been the same, which is freedom?
I feel like for me, before I started to generate some revenue, as an entrepreneur and a producer, I always felt like success was a certain number of money.
Hmm.
But I realized money doesn't buy time.
It does. It kind of does.
It does to an extent, but
because you can delegate work, right? Yeah.
Yeah, you can't get time back, and you can't create time that you don't have. That's why you're a doctor. You know, if your job is to be a doctor, and that's how you're generating your income, you can't say, "I want to be a doctor," and then just work on my own time. If you work for the hospital, you work for this corporation. You know what I'm saying?
Totally. Yep. So
before I got to reach a certain level, I always thought, if I have $10 million, you know, I'm successful. You know, if I have $10 million and I can't spend the time with my mom, or I can't spend the time with the people I love or whatever, am I truly successful?
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? But if I don't have peace in my spirit and my mind, am I truly successful, or am I just a person with a lot of capital?
Well, there you have it. I hope you enjoyed this conversation. If you did, please take a minute and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or just hit that follow button on Spotify. Also, be sure to go follow Papier on Instagram @Papier. Until the next time, dream big because you, my friend, are made for more.